This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. The U.S. Department of Agriculture this week handed down the long-awaited regulations on hemp. They go into effect today. HPR's Ryan Finnerty joins us this morning to lay out the landscape. Good morning.
Morning, Catherine. And so this these new rules, as you mentioned, have been everybody's been waiting for them for a while. Hemp was legalized by U.S. Congress, the cultivation of hemp, in 2018. In what's called the Farm Bill. That's this really big package of legislation that deals with all the federal farm programs. And one of the things that was included in it was a delisting of hemp from the controlled substances list. So marijuana is still there, but hemp, its cousin, has been removed. And ever since, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has been working on the rules, the regulations for what that means, how that industry would actually be regulated. And, you know, that's sort of how our government works at the federal, state, and local level. The elected officials pass laws, and then the regulatory agencies write the rules for what the law means. They interpret the law, write the rules, and then that's kind of the guidelines for regular people and businesses to actually do whatever the law pertains to. And Hawaii, like many other states, has had a test program in hemp cultivation. Ours was started in 2016. That was because in a previous farm bill, 2014, it authorized these test programs. But it's been pretty limited to date. There are only around 30, a little more than 30 permits have been issued for people to grow hemp in Hawaii. Each one of those permits is limited to 10 acres. And in reality, people have been growing a lot less. The number I found was in 2018, there were only around 2 acres grown statewide. And so it really is meant for, it was meant for farmers and people interested to kind of test it out and see if it would work, but not to be a commercial business, a for-profit entity. You were allowed to sell it in Hawaii. The Department of Agriculture, the Hawaii Department of Agriculture, didn't restrict the sale of hemp flowers, just the cultivation. But there was a lot of uncertainty amongst farmers because it was basically, it wasn't addressed either in the 2018 Farm Bill or the state pilot program, whether you could transport hemp either within Hawaii or interstate. And, you know, that's kind of complicated here because it has to go on a ship or an airplane. It's not just like putting it on a truck and driving it to the next state over. So a lot of farmers, the ones I spoke to, were basically operating under the assumption that they could not transport it. They didn't want to get caught up in, you know, what could be considered drug trafficking because the law was unclear. And so these rules from the USDA clarify that it is lawful to cultivate hemp with, as long as it has below a certain level of THC, the psychoactive chemical in marijuana, and that it is legal to transport it interstate.
And some of our growers I know have had to pull up their plants because they had, the levels were just darn too high. You know?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting thing, actually. And so in announcing these rules, there are two undersecretaries of agriculture for the U.S. Department of Agriculture kind of laid out what it means. And one of them, Bill Ibach, he addressed that exact thing, that this is kind of a risky crop because you have this 0.3 THC limit, so 0.3%, and anything above that, it's considered a drug. And a lot of things can affect that. The weather can do it, the variety of hemp that's planted. And one of a reporter from Oklahoma asked him about this and what it means for farmers, and this is what he had to say.
So just like every other crop has its risks and rewards, sometimes we have weather conditions that cause wheat to be low protein and not as valuable in the marketplace. Hemp is not without its production risks and difficulties either. As producers are learning what varieties of seed to plant, because different seeds will perform differently in different growing areas of our nation. Obviously, what works in Montana may not perform the same way in Texas or Florida. And so that's something that producers do need to be cognizant of as they move forward.
And so, as he said, there, you know, there is some risk here. There's some benefits too. Now that these rules are in place, hemp farmers will get access to loans, federal loans, crop insurance, and other farm assistance, just like any other crop. The rules also lay out inspection requirements for states, how they're going to verify that there's that the the crop is not exceeding that 0.3% THC limit. But that there's some concerns specifically for Hawaii. Other states have kind of moved ahead already. They took the farm bill and that language and instituted commercial programs. New York and Oregon have really expanded. Hawaii lawmakers tried to do that in the 2019 legislative session. They passed a bill that would have expanded the test program, the pilot program that the state runs for hemp, into a full-blown commercial operation. Governor David Ige vetoed that because he did not want to pass any state laws before we got these rules from the USDA. He did say that he generally supports the industry, but wanted to make sure that nothing we did here was in violation of federal law. We now know what those federal laws or the federal regulations are going to be. There's still some questions, though, ensuring that you are under that 0.3 limit. That needs to be tested by a DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration certified lab. There's only two of those currently in Hawaii, according to the Department of Agriculture. They're both on Oahu. They're used in the medical marijuana program right now. They can do hemp, but it's, again, it's sort of, there's uncertainty for some of the farmers still about whether or not they're going to be able to move it by air, by sea. The law does say that it's legal to move it interstate, so theoretically it shouldn't be a problem, but, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty there. And I talked to Steve Rose, who runs the Maui Hemp Institute, about that sort of risk and some of those uncertainties.
The risk is there. However, those that are real farmers, not those that are in the get-quick-rich, will be able to bring in hemp crops, basically through the genetics and the methods of growing. And we need to do some research to see what happens, you know, because we've never really grown large-scale hemp in the islands. But I'm convinced from those I talk to who are real farmers and real scientists that this will not be a problem, you know, for those that really, really are doing it right.
And so we're kind of waiting to see. We expect that it will take a new law from the state legislature signed by the governor to expand the program. According to the Department of Agriculture, they can't do it under the existing
and
program.
And these rules, do they talk about CBD at all? Because you've heard a lot about that and concern.
Yeah, so CBD is the main product that hemp produces. It can be used for a lot of things, but that's the big one. That's the most valuable one. That is not regulated by the Department of Agriculture, either in the state or the federal government. That's handled in Hawaii by the Department of Health.
So we'll have to look for changes for that.
Yeah, and CBD products are regulated federally by the Food and Drug Administration. Right now, they've only approved a few pretty limited medications, one for seizures, I believe, and another one for anorexia. Okay. And so there's a proliferation of products, but most of them are not officially regulated by anyone.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Sure thing.
That was HPR's Ryan Finnerty talking about the new federal hemp rules just released this week.
Support for HPR Local Reporting comes from the Hawaii Community Foundation, working to create a movement through the change framework to help Hawaii communities solve challenges and thrive. HawaiiCommunityFoundation.org/change to join the movement.
Musicians love to shrug off our need for sleep.
We will never sleep, cause sleep is for the weak.
Now we'll never sleep, cause sleep is the cousin of death.
You don't need sleep. That was the thinking back in the 60s, and that's the thinking that I had.
Meet the man who went 11 days without sleep this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Tonight at 7, following Says You.
This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. For today's backyard quiz, we explore one of Oahu's supposedly haunted stretch of back road. Morgan's Corner, as it's known, lies on a hairpin turn of Old Pali Road, the that once connected Honolulu to Kaneohe before the construction of the Pali Highway. In 1948, the corner was the setting for a real-life crime when two escapees of a prison work gang murdered a resident of the area after burglarizing a nearby home. The men who committed the act were sentenced to death by hanging. Spooky stories of the corner would later emerge, involving the restless spirit of a hanged girl whose spectral form, who some say still haunts the road to this day. Another urban legend tells of a young couple whose car broke down around the side of this hairpin, haunted hairpin, and as the boyfriend left to get help, the girlfriend stayed behind. As more time passed with the boyfriend nowhere in sight, the girlfriend became restless and fell asleep. She awoke the next morning to a policeman pulling her out of the car, warning her not to look behind her. As morbid curiosity got the best of her, she turned to see her boyfriend tied by his feet, an old tree, dead. While all manners of ghostly tales surrounding Morgan's Corner in Nu'uanu, the name behind this spooky stretch of road is very much rooted in reality. For today's backyard quiz, can you tell us who the namesake of Morgan's Corner was? Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets a reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Support for The Conversation comes from Sacred Hearts Academy, a private school for girls in grades preschool through high school, where the focus is on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Learn more at sacredhearts.org.
Perfect for our Hawaiian Halloween holiday, local filmmakers Blake and Brent Cousins are back with a new version of their 2001 film, The Night Marchers. It's in select theaters now across the state. The brothers, along with actor Timothy Borger, stopped by HPR to speak about it with All Things Considered host Dave Lawrence.
Welcome to HPR, Brent, Blake, and Tim.
Good to be here with you, Dave.
Great.
Thanks
to have
for having
you.
Us here.
You are super welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you guys grew up on Hawaii Island?
Yeah, we came over from the mainland and arrived over here in 1973 and spent some time in Palolo Valley and then moved to the North Shore and then eventually made it over to the Big Island where we currently reside.
The original Night Marchers film, was that your very first major film?
Well, my brother and I, we've been making films since we're about 12 years old. Our parents were lucky enough to get us a video camera when we were 12, and we started making movies back then, and we thought we could make movies like Indiana Jones right away. We quickly found out that it wasn't as easy as it looked, but fine-tuning our techniques and showcasing our movies, our short films, and in the high schools in Honoka'a, you know, so it kind of led us in the direction of making feature films.
Explain when you first became fascinated with the whole Night Marcher story, and then obviously it became a big inspiration for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, over the years, growing up, you've heard of the legend. Kids talked about it. Adults talked about it. Later on in life, we started to find out that even the police department, fire department, paramedics, they've all experienced paranormal activity. So it inspired us to basically make a movie on the legend that unlike anybody's ever seen. And the legend's powerful. After making the movie 20 years ago, we've heard many, many times, probably hundreds of times, as people have come up to us and explained their sightings of the Night Marchers. Mm. And we're constantly asked, when are you guys going to make another movie?
And it's being called a reboot of the film. So is this an all-new version that picks up where the original left off?
Yeah, you could basically say it does pick off the last movie 20 years ago. It's a retelling, basically, with the new culture that's around and new technology as well from what we had before with the shaky cam. Kind of made people dizzy, but now we have quality state-of-the-art equipment using Steadicams, also drones as well, and shot in 4K. And it's a whole new cast.
Yeah, I was going to say, Tim looks a little young, I would think.
Yeah. How old was I? What year was it?
Came out 2001.
Yeah, I was like 16.
Could have been in the movie then, obviously, and then still. So no returning cast members then.
Actually, I do have a self-cast in this one.
And, yourself.
Yeah, and I was a star in the original,
right,
in 2001.
I play a totally different character, but yeah, I inserted myself just kind of doing a Hitchcock thing, kind of.
So it was like a cameo,
a cameo.
Shows you with the camera, so you're like seeing the
Absolutely.
Movie getting made.
Yeah,
you're watching it. Those are cool, actually. I like those. That's kind of a trippy thing. And is it all local actors and actresses?
I would say half of the crew's pretty much from Hawaii, and the other we flew in from the mainland. We wanted them to basically come down to the islands and feel kind of like out of place,
sure.
which they definitely were. And our local cast was strong, and that's what we really wanted to showcase in the film. We got some leading talent along with Kaylee Kanakoa and Anulea La from the islands, and these guys really steal the show. And the talent that Hawaii has to offer is pretty outstanding, and we're really lucky.
Tim, you're from here, or they fly you in?
I'm from L.A.
What was the most challenging part of it when you look back at filming this?
We were in some pretty gnarly caves, just the random locations that we went to. We went into, what was the valley?
We went to Waipio Valley.
But there was another valley. Kaylee says the King's Valley.
Oh, that was, we're filming that in a little place called Hakalau, and some of the access is blocked off due to landslides, but we're able to hike in and film in these locations that really have never been seen on the big screen, and we're excited to bring that to the people.
So that's also going to be part of it, as you kind of get a little private tour of some land and places that you wouldn't normally be able to see. That's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. So is the whole thing filmed on Big Island? Is that the?
Yeah, we primarily filmed the entire movie on the Hamakua coast of the Big Island. We did some shooting in Los Angeles as well to get our characters established, flying from the mainland to Hawaii. And one of the challenges is to bring these actors from the mainland who have actually never been to Hawaii. And when you see some of the fear on their faces and the anxiety that's coming across on the film, a lot of it's not even acting. It's actually the true expressions.
And when you think back to making the first one and then you think about this one, are there really big differences that the technology has made?
Yeah, it's a night and day look on what we had 20 years ago and the way what we're shooting now with this new technology. It's really super clear. The sound audio's a lot cleaner than it was on the first one. Some of the big things that are different in the film is drones. We have amazing drones.
And the photography that comes from
and
that.
And the photography that comes with it is spectacular. And we utilized a lot of these locations here on the Big Island that basically has never been seen before.
That's cool.
Yeah, and some of these other locations that we've also gone into, like when you remember the first movie, we were in a cave and it was fairly dark, but now we totally lit up the cave, and this whole cave scene that you go on this adventure, you really get to see your surroundings.
You guys are into this whole zombie-ish kind of thing. I was looking at some of your other stuff. There's Rising Dead is another one of these. Mm-hmm. And that's before. It's fascinating. I guess these, what do these all go back to? George Romero? Because this thing, the Rising Dead one, was that you who's the star?
Yeah.
And that is 2007?
Absolutely.
So that was before the Rage of the Walking Dead.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. We've been following the Walking Dead recently. Might have some issues with us because it seems to me that the Walking Dead watched the Rising Dead and they treat it as their Bible because everything they use in their TV show is basically going after the standard of what we did in 2007.
Right.
Even in the film, I say The Walking Dead, and I'm sure that's where they came up with the title. I don't know. We might have to ask AMC about what's going on over
there. That could
there.
Be lucrative.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
That could be the Night Marchers 3.
Yeah, maybe they could fund our next movie.
Budget development in a creative way. After the Halloween season, is this going to end up on DVD or whatever?
Well, Regal Cinemas say, depending on the turnout, it might possibly be extended after the 31st.
Because, I mean, now it's weird these days, huh? Like, do people buy a DVD or more? They'd be more inclined to watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, Regal Cinemas, one of the deals is we won't be able to release it to DVD or any other platform until 6 months after the premiere on the big screen, which is fine with us. And, yeah, we have some connections in Los Angeles, Hollywood, that may be able to distribute the film via Amazon Prime, Hulu, or Netflix and other streaming services. Big possibility.
Is the first one on Netflix?
The first one made it to Netflix back in the day, but the DVDs just kept getting ripped off, just like the DVDs from the Night Marchers in all the public library system throughout the state. They don't exist. Everybody just kept them
It's part of the mystery, though.
Yeah, sure.
Because they're being secretly taken up. That could be the plot line for the next one. Yeah. You're kind of like filming yourselves. We did this movie, but someone keeps stealing it. Where are they all disappearing? And then you find this weird house where they've been hoarding all the copies of it, and they could be in the basement. It is Tim Borger, and it's the Cousins brothers, Blake and Brent Cousins. They're directors. They're twins, so it's easy to see they could both be just interchangeably taking him.
Some, our friends kind of get kind of jealous of us. They said, I wish I had a twin.
Right. No, that wasn't me. It was great that you came down. Good luck with this thing, and we'll keep our doors locked, I guess, because we'll be scared during this season. But thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.
That was HPR's Dave Lawrence talking with filmmakers Blake and Brent Cousins and actor Timothy Borger. Their 2001 cult hit, The Night Marchers, has been redone, reworked, and is back in theaters. Go to HawaiiPublicRadio.org for details. There are real-life scary stories swirling around vaping. The deaths and injuries continue to climb nationwide. Eleni Gill covers healthcare issues for Honolulu Civil Beat and has a series of stories about vaping. Good morning, Eleni.
How are you doing?
Good. So, gosh, you know, we've been watching these stories and watching this kind of play out. You were able to get some good numbers on where these vaping devices are being sold now.
Yeah, so what we've been seeing across the nation, in Hawaii, we've only had two local cases of lung injury reported by Hawaii health officials as being possibly linked to vaping, but the underlying causes are pretty shrouded in mystery. Most of the cases, according to the CDC, patients said that they used THC in their vaping liquids. But here in Hawaii, the way it's been playing out, though, is that teenagers actually have some of the highest vaping rates when compared to the rest of the country.
Yeah, it is pretty shocking when you see the use. Why is that?
So I guess when Hawaii high schoolers were asked if they were current users of e-cigarettes, more than a quarter of them said they vaped at least once within the past month. And researchers at the University of Hawaii Cancer Center told me that it could be because we got a head start on the trend that actually started in Asia, but public health officials say it's because marketing from the vaping industry directly targeted young people, and online marketing also contributes to our high youth vape rate, according to those researchers.
And then your research shows that a lot of this stuff is being sold in convenience stores.
Yeah, it was actually really interesting because when you think of vaping shops, you might think of the retailers that sell specific e-cigarette-related products, but actually 7-Eleven stores and ABC stores had the most retail locations that offer these products here in Hawaii. And when you're looking at it on a per capita basis, the neighbor islands actually had higher vape shops or vaping retailers per capita.
And so are there a lot of, like, pop-ups, too, in addition to the, you know, the gas stations and 7-Elevens?
Yeah, the Attorney General Department did mention that these sort of vaping retailers that specifically sell only e-cigarette products do sort of pop up here and there and close down a lot. But the accessibility is definitely out there.
Yeah, I think the reference was like chasing ghosts, right? They're here today, gone tomorrow, and then they're somewhere else.
Yeah, so the Attorney General's office or department actually just put a list of all of the 670 retailers of vaping products or electronic smoking cigarette devices across the islands. And so you can see when you look at that list, actually, which retailers do offer these products.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, they're everywhere. Airports, Waikiki, just all over.
Yeah, and Costco and in light of the lung injuries and even deaths that have been happening across the nation, some retailers like Walmart and Walgreens have decided to pull these products from their shelves until the investigation completes, because no single compound or ingredient has been identified as the cause for these mysterious lung injuries.
Yeah, and I know some of the retailers have decided not to sell some of these vaping devices just because of, you know, the dangers, right?
Yeah, right. And so here in Hawaii, those retailers have been Walmart and Walgreens, and those decisions just came out in September and this month in October. So it's been a pretty recent move that we're seeing nationally, these big companies saying, hey, actually, we are not going to sell these products until the CDC has some real findings in its investigation into possible vaping-related illnesses.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that surprises me, is that they haven't really pinned this down yet, and it's been playing out, gosh, for, you know, a good part of the summer.
Yeah, it's pretty much a mystery, but one thing that DOH officials here in Hawaii are very concerned about is the fact that many Hawaii teenagers are now addicted to nicotine, and what are the health ramifications of that. We don't have that much data on how to help younger people with addictions to nicotine, and also we're learning more and more about that, how that sort of addiction can affect young developing brains and affect mood control and impulse control. So I think there's a lot more investigation and more data to be collected so we can figure out what's going on with this vaping phenomenon.
Yeah, all very troubling. But thanks so much, Eleni.
Thank you.
That was reporter Eleni Gill with today's Reality Check. To read her series, go to civilbeat.org.
When master storyteller Ira Glass created This American Life, he changed the sound of the airwaves and attracted a whole new generation of public radio listeners. Join HPR and Hawaii Theater Center for Ira Glass's first performance in the islands, Saturday, December 21st. Learn about his creative process in a unique multimedia talk with an audience Q&A. Support the station and get the best seats by going to hprtickets.org. Sponsored by Anthology Marketing Group.
Well, this morning we are looking at how the city supports art programs around town, and here to tell us all about is HPR's Noe Tanigawa.
Right. Hey, Catherine. You know, the city's arts kulian is pretty extensive when you start looking at it. I mean, it covers art in place, like the new Kamehameha III statue that's there in Thomas Square. Yeah, it was a pretty good-looking thing there. And it covers parks and rec programs, you know, the hula classes, the bonsai, tai chi, ceramics, ukulele, right? All of that happens in neighborhoods all across the island. Also, there's the May Day Lay Contest, Christmas Wreath Contest, Honolulu. I mean, all of this kind of falls under the culture and arts umbrella that the city does. And I was talking with the city managing director, Roy Amemiya, who says in Hawaii, the fact that it's not just the Western arts, you know, ballet and symphony, that is the reason our city's dollars available for culture really get stretched in this town. I mean, Hawaii Theater recently lost a city subsidy for local performing groups. And that means a lot of them will have to look elsewhere. It's going to be, what, can I have my ho'ike at Hawaii Theater? That's how it's going to be. And nobody's happy about that, not the groups, not the theater, and really not the city either. It's just tough decisions are being made. And did you know Honolulu has an official arts district? Yeah.
Is it downtown? Chinatown?
It's between Bethel and Smith. Okay, Bethel and Smith. And then from Nimitz to Beretania. But I mean, where is the art in that area, right? Well, Sandy Pohl still is holding on with Louis Pohl Gallery there up on Bethel. She opened the Downtown Art Center a few months ago there in the Chinatown Gateway Plaza. It's the building where the Satellite City Hall recently moved in. And this is some kind of interesting news. She's just gotten Barbara Rao, the former manager of the Contemporary Museum gift shop, to take over the Downtown Art Center. And her goal is to make it like Following Sea, Remember that shop in Kahala? That's the goal there. And Pohl does make and take art classes, so office workers might be able to pop by to make bracelets or earrings or necklaces, you know, classes in there sometimes. There's also a 10,000 square foot space on the second floor of that Gateway Plaza. Huge open space, high ceilings, just like the New York City loft spaces that Soho, Tribeca, Chelsea, all of those now thriving commercial districts that started as, you know, art outposts. I mean, it's just that kind of space that gives you your imagination some wings, right? Okay, here's how it breaks down. $1.22 per square foot, that's the maintenance. $1.70 per square foot, that's the rent. So the total, $2.92, almost $3 a square foot for that space. It's been available for years.
So nobody's in there now.
Nobody has been there for 8 years plus. Pohl has applied. The Honolulu printmakers also applied for a space up there, but neither bid covers both rent and maintenance. I mean, that would come to about $30,000 a month.
Wow, that's a big nut to crack.
And I asked Mr. Amemiya what the city's looking for in their tenant.
The ability to pay rent is a big one. We need to make sure whoever moves in there is going to be successful. And I think that's what our property managers are looking for more than anything else. To be very honest, throughout Chinatown, we're looking for tenants that will activate the space. Because the more active the space is, the less likely it is that people are going to just loiter. So we are looking for people who can bring people to the space.
Totally makes sense, right?
You need a magnet.
Oh, yeah. And right now the city has 7 available properties in Chinatown. They range from 300 square feet to 13,000, that one there in Gateway. And we're wringing our hands about how to invigorate Chinatown, right? Well, remember what happened in Kaka'ako? It was only 2014. I mean, like 5 years ago that the Agora opened up. That space that had free events, films, panels. Then Eat the Street was brought down there. Lana Lane, the artist studios, opened up. And you know, we're really seeing activity. We see it work to bring people down there. Programming events and subsidized rents really do work. Right now, Gateway Plaza, second floor, is empty. And the city really doesn't want to take chances. But is anybody demanding art spaces?
Yeah, it's a dilemma, huh?
Maybe Sandy's the only one. Well, City Managing Director Georgette Deemer did make these points. The city has an art in public places law, just like the state. 1% of the cost of new city building does go to art. Rail money is the infusion to be looking for now. She says transit-oriented development at Kekalike Mall will be transformational for that Eva end of Chinatown, right? And, that's really where the infusion for art is going to come from, really, is from transit-oriented development money.
Well, I know you had a story, about a month or so ago about the arts at Mark's Garage and kind of the dilemma that they're facing.
Exactly. You know, we're still on that same timeline. They're giving till about the middle of the month here to really decide whether to keep it going. Well, they've got a super event coming up on Halloween night. It's going to be the Rocky Horror Picture Show, hosted by, the MC of Fresh Fish Drag Review, the Titta Tisling. She'll be on stage hosting the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And then do remember that they're looking for a $50,000 donor to get the theater named after them. But mid-November is the date. They're going to either call it quits or soldier on at that extremely vital art space in Chinatown.
So we need a white knight in their corner.
I really do. And, you know, Sandy's asking for maybe $60,000 to just get her going in that space, upstairs in China. So it's not huge amounts of money for the right type of investor or for the right type of commitment on the part of a government resource. But, you know, there are still things going on great in Chinatown, and one of them is First Friday coming up, this Friday, of course, and it's happening at High Sam, which has, of course, been revived of late. It's the Hawaii Fashion Month fashion show. It's going to start at 7 o'clock, all right, and it's cool because this time they've got citadine in French, kind of French urban wear, which is cool for us in Hawaii. It's kind of maybe understated office wear type of thing, but with a little kick to it. Laha Ole Designs, their jewelry is going to be coming in, and it's kind of fine hammered gold and silver, fine shapes there, also involving Tahitian pearls sometimes. Nice to see. Okika Cloth is kind of having their launch at this fashion show. It's interesting resort wear, again, kind of that loose kind of a printed cloth. It's all linen, kind of ink drawings, lots of blue on white.
Pretty.
It's really quite elegant. Matt Bruning is going to be there. He's rocking the one-shoulder undershirt look over the summer, but he's got a whole new line out that he's going to be premiering that night. So hands-on activities, too. That's going to be really fun first Friday at High Sam. And then on Saturday, this is so cool, the Honolulu Printmakers Print and Book Fairs opening at the Entrepreneurs Sandbox.
Yes, the new It Place, right?
Exactly. And who would have thought, right? It's the It Place because it's an art and tech and design and, you know, ideas place. And where is it? Nobody knows, but you will know. It's there in Kaka'ako. It's on Ilalo Street, Makai of Ala Moana Boulevard. Yeah. I mean, get used to going down there.
It's right next to the University of Hawaii Medical School.
Uh-huh. Again, another outpost being claimed by the arts community, and it's so cool. This print and book fair is really fun. You know, it's growing every year, and it's kind of falling on the heels of these incredible book fairs that happen around the world now that just invite all kinds of people to experiment in the area of reproduced images. And so books are not what you thought they were. Even zines are not what you thought they were. There are also hand-pulled limited edition prints, and artists are there with kind of bargain price misprints that are sometimes super fun. So it's going to be a really great time there. That's again, activities all day long, too, noon to 9 p.m. at the Entrepreneur Sandbox, the print and book fair this year.
Yeah, so it's interesting how these favorite events are finding new venues, you know, whether it's a cultural festival that is moved from Kapi'olani Park to the convention center.
Exactly,
or,
like the Okinawan Fair.
Right, we've had the wood show. That moved from Linikona. Now it's over at Manalua Garden. So
right. It was there in that Chinese hall that you mentioned. And you know what? I didn't make it there this year. It's over now. But it's another reason to go there next year. I mean, Linikona became unavailable for a lot of these groups. And like artists, like creative people, they have created spaces elsewhere. Let's visit them there.
Yes. Support the arts.
All
right. Thanks so much, Noe. We've been talking to Noe Tanigawa about the various programs that the city supports and what's happening on the art scene.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hanahaoli School, celebrating over 100 years of dedication to joyful learning at its 2019 Children's Fair, 10 to 3 this Saturday. hanahaoli.org/events.
For today's backyard quiz, we delve into the spooky folklore surrounding the haunted hairpin turn on Old Pali Road known as Morgan's Corner. The corner was the site of a real-life murder in 1948 and since then has been the setting for many terrifying tales. And while Morgan's Corner has no shortage of modern urban myths surrounding it, the site is also said to be haunted by much older spirits. The corner is said to be near the real-life site of the Battle of Nu'uanu, where King Kamehameha triumphed over the occupying forces of Maui, led by Chief Kalani Kapule. Kamehameha's cannons gave him the upper hand as he closed in on his opponents. Many were forced to leap from the cliffs to their doom. Over 400 are said to have perished in this final battle. And to this day, it's said that the ghosts of those leaping warriors can still be seen around that haunted stretch of Old Pali Road. It's unclear if Dr. James Morgan knew that he was purchasing a home on one of Hawaii's most haunted swaths of land, but nevertheless, the haunted hairpin turn, today known as Morgan's Corner, is named for him. No winners today, but if you got an idea for a backyard quiz, send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
hello. This is Vlad. And I listen to the conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Why? As it gets my blood boiling. I gotta stop smoking those vapes.
If you aren't already in the Halloween mood, well, we close out the hour with master storyteller Jeff Geer. He stopped by and left us a treat.
Well, because I love Halloween, and because it's my birthday, and because I'm a supporter of Hawaii, I thought I'd just come into the studio, because Catherine invited me, and tell you guys a spooky story, okay?
Okay. Be my guest.
Let's see. My friend Lopaka Kapanui does the best ghost tours in Hawaii, and he invited me to come on one. So I did. And he began by saying, so, how many of you believe in ghosts? Some people put up their hands. How many of you don't believe in ghosts? Some people put up their hands. He goes, that's good. So don't call me when you have something follow you home. Let's all go follow me. And I'm like, wait. He's like, what? I say, I've got a story. He goes, oh. I'm in the back of Punch Bowl. I'm finishing up the gig. The summer fun kids are all excited. It's time for lunch.
Why? That was cool, mister.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye. That was cool, mister.
Yeah, thanks. Bye. Bye. In the back of the group of kids, I see one ehu-headed kid, big eyes, no neck, eyes, clearly he's bugged. He wants to say something. The kids go bye. Bye, 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 bye. I wave to him. You like come tell me something?
When my tutu lady died, I was in my bed, and the door was open. I could look through and see my mama. My mama was in the kitchen, and I saw my tutu lady walk by. I say, tutu! And my mama stopped what she's doing in the kitchen. She come in. She come up to me. She say,
you saw her too? The boy is starting to cry. Tears are rolling down his cheeks. I bend down just to listen a little better.
And that night I was in bed. I was sleeping. And I felt something touch my eyes. And I woke up. And there was my tutu lady. And she said,
Kihoni. Kihoni. I will always love you. Never forget, Kioti. I love you.
And then she just went away.
Tears are rolling. I hug the little boy. I say, you know, she just couldn't go to where the dead people go before she made sure she came by to tell you how much she loved you. Right?
Yeah.
And he got up and left me with the story that I just told to you. So to you people who don't believe in ghosts, I've got a question. Do you really think that little boy made that story up?
Happy.
He didn't make that up.
No. I just did Boo at the Zoo. 3 hours for 2 nights of storytelling to the little 2-year-old with their princess outfit, or the little girls with wings, or the teenagers with, you know, push-up bras who are chewing gum who want to spook me out, man. It's just a variety pack of humans and moms and dads. And
is this like your favorite time of year?
Oh, totally. Oh, totally. And it begins with the Pride Parade and then that odd variety pack of humans that assemble. I feel so at home.
Yes, my people, my yeah, tribe.
That's right. All kinds of varieties in that rainbow. And I'm among us. Okay. Back to work.
Yeah, tell me another story.
So I'm in Hilo. I've got a show in a little nothing place, and people come. I tell spooky stories, and at the end of it, Kate Shurish, an old friend, does puppetry, comes up and goes, "Okay, I got one for you." She says, friends of mine are pig hunters. You know, the kind of, like, all muscle, no neck. You hit their shoulder. Ow, it hurts your hand. I mean, stocky
solid
guys. Yeah, and they've got dogs. And every weekend, they put them in the back of the truck, and they go to remote places. And she says, they don't, like, shoot. They don't even use bow and arrow. They use knife. So they get up close and personal, slit the throat, chase the pig down. Of course, then you got to gut him, pull out the guts, do what you can to lighten the load, because you're going to throw him over your shoulders and hope that the leeches don't bite you as you carry him back to the car. Well, she says their wives know this, and they're not coming in the house with those pigs to gut them. So they've built a little corrugated shack, open walls, some little side things, but lots of water, cement floor, because when you skin, you got to peel off the skin. It's a lot of blood. They're in big boots because the blood coagulates. The ground gets sticky, tacky. She says they got two pigs. They're cleaning them up, pulling off the skin. And one of the daughters goes, "You can come, Auntie. You can come." And they turn around. And Kate told me that they told her, "Old lady, wild Hawaiian gray-black hair, eyes like coals, so dark, midnight, burning. She just comes in. Nobody says a word. She never said a word. They never. Staring, stabbing, looking them. Pigs. One to the other, the pigs. Slowly backing across the corrugated wall to where it stops and disappears." "Oh, that lady freaky. That your friend?" "Oh, I don't know who that is. I don't know. I thought she was your friend." "She's not my friend. I never saw her before. Who's the lady? Who's the lady? Who's that lady?" And then the little kid goes, "Daddy, Daddy, look, the blood." And they look where the blood is tacky on the floor. And where the lady had gone in one door and out the other, the blood is unspoiled. She floated.
Okay. Chicken skin.
True.
Now, you know, you've been to many places telling stories. Yeah. Has there been any one particular place that gave you chicken skin?
Hey, hey, Mr. Jeff, you can tell the Wailua High School all-nighter, you know, the grad nights where they put them all someplace and take them exotic so they don't get killed on the freeway because they drank too much and they kind of control them. And it's a parent's, like, way to, you know, corral these
grad
newly
night,
grad. And they're, like, so excited. And by 12 o'clock, they're almost asleep because they're just, like, they've reached the end of their... So I'm there at midnight to spook out the Wailua graduating class at Kualoa. And, "Oh, we're so excited to have you, Mr. Jeff. The magician is running a little long." So 12:30, quarter of one. "Well, we've got to have a snack now." "Well, where are we going to do this?" "Down there, there's a little amphitheater." Go down to the amphitheater, and they've got all these planks up. "Oh, we're going to burn them and make a big fire." I'm like, "Well, light it right now so it can burn down, because I've been singed by lots of those fires. So there's storytelling about the fire." "Yeah, right. I come home like a barbecue. My left ear is like clubbed barbecue sausage." "Yeah, I'm like, I smell like a fire." So I'm not real wild about fires and storytelling, but it's a lot of time. Okay, so I'm like, "Light the fire." And he's like, "No, we'll wait for the kids to come." "Light the fire! Okay, well, geez, oh, man." He lights the fire, and the kids are coming down. They're like, "Whoa!" They put on their sunglasses. They're like, "Oh!" It's a huge fire, bonfire. I'm like, "Oh, another half hour to let that thing turn down." And I start telling a story, which, for the convenience of the listening audience, I'll just truncate to say, it's about a shadow that haunted a graveyard. And as I'm telling the story, the boys in their sunglasses are taking them off, and they're kind of like nudging each other, and they're going, they're like pointing, and they're not paying attention to my story. I'm like, "What the heck is that?" And they go, "What's up?" I say, and they say, "Hey, over there." And I turn to my left, And right on the edge of the trees in Kuolo, in the basement, in the base there where you drive in, there's a big... I see a shadow standing up, moving. Shadows are supposed to be attached to real objects.
Somebody.
This was somebody, but there was no real object. And it's edging around the perimeter of the light of the fire. And the kids are moving slowly, without saying a thing, away from the fire, moving closer, farther away. I'm watching this shadow walk towards the edge of my audience. And they're seeing it, no story, everybody's looking, everything's silent. And being who I am, I say, "Hey, who are you? You're messing up my story. Get out of here." Ha ha ha, kind of a nervous ha 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 ha. And then I start into the finish the story. And then it's over, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I look over, there's nobody there. I say, "What happened to that thing?" "Oh, you went and yelled at the lady, and she just went away." I go to the promoter at the end. "Oh my God, that was so great. Here's your check. Oh, it's so good. And thank your friend." "What friend?" "Well, the friend that came around the corner all in black. Oh, that was so chicken skin." I'm like, "You really think I have a friend who's going to wait in the bushes for 2 hours to come around the corner at the right moment to scare your kids? That wasn't my friend. I thought it was one of you guys." "Oh, no. We all have Grad Night white T-shirts. It's like this. Here's one for you." "Well, who was that?"
We'll never know.
That was a little freaky.
Just a little freaky. That was storyteller Jeff Geer getting us in the mood for trick-or-treating Fright Night. Happy Halloween, everybody. Stay safe out there.
Dance, I curse these days. And at night when the wolves cry out, listen close, then you can hear me shout. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life.
That winds it up for this Thursday. Up tomorrow, we talk electric vehicles. It's a rebroadcast of an earlier show. Find out how to get a free EV charger. Tell us what's on your mind. Call or talk back line 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. We are on Facebook at The Conversation HPR and Twitter at HI Conversation. If you missed this show or want to find a past one, find them on The Conversation page on hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.